Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can talk and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So, by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belville.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome back, everybody. Time for Toker Talk Radio. So glad to have you here joining us on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. Or evening, if you're farther east. Earlier in the show, we did a piece on UC Davis, this study about teen perceptions of marijuana's harms in Washington State versus the increase in use in Washington State. And this is supposedly supposed to scare us. Oh my God, we legalized marijuana and more kids are using it. Quick, we better start locking up brown people again. I mean, that's really like, what's their response, right? Like, suppose we study legalization and it does turn out that, oh my God, we legalized pot and teen use went up 25%. So what? What would the response be? Oh, we need to go back to prohibition. Time to start locking people up again. Folks, I don't care if the teen use goes up. We're going to have to find some other way to deal with it. If we were to compare what the teen use is of alcohol compared to how much teen use would be if we prohibited it again, would that be reason enough to start locking people up for beer? I could probably make the case that teen use would go down if we completely criminalized alcohol to the level we completely criminalized marijuana. I can bet you dollars to donuts that the teen use is going to go down. Is that justification to lock up adults for beer? If it's not, then there's no justification to lock up adults for marijuana. This is one of the fears I've got as we continue to legalize marijuana. And I've got a lot of them because it's kind of my job to think of worst case scenarios. But the fear I've got is that we might bet too much. We might put too much credence into the values, to the results that we get from marijuana legalization, right? Oh, we legalized marijuana. We made so much in tax money. Oh, we legalized marijuana. We reduced all these arrests. Oh, we legalized marijuana and teen use didn't go up. Oh, we legalized marijuana and traffic fatalities went down, right? And these are good things to note. I don't disparage that at all. I mean, it's great that we're getting that info out there. But what if it changes? What if after, you know, maybe that the legalization in Washington and Colorado didn't really have too much of an effect, and adding Oregon and Alaska didn't have too much of an effect, because these were small states and the general national perceptions hadn't changed. But what if by legalizing in California and making the entire West Coast legal and starting some legalization in Maine and Massachusetts, what if we see a reversal in some of our numbers? Already, I can point to some numbers in Washington State and in Colorado where the 2015 traffic fatality numbers are up. And what if we start to see the teen use rates go up? And what if, as the price of marijuana plummets, which I predict it will, we see all those tax revenues starting to go down? What if all these things happen? What if bad things start to happen after legalization? If we've gotten ourselves too dedicated to the point that if we do X, Y will happen. If we legalize, good things will happen. If we get ourselves too attached to that, what happens when the bad things start happening? I guess we better go back to locking up black and brown people, right? This is why I always like to make the point that while it's great that X, Y, or Z happens because of legalization, that's not why we legalize. We're not legalizing to raise tax money. It's a nice benefit. We're not legalizing to reduce teen use, but that's a nice benefit. We're legalizing because it is wrong to lock people up for using weed. It is wrong to punish people for making a safer choice when it comes to recreation. It is wrong to put roadblocks in front of people trying to treat their illnesses with a non-toxic herb. It's just wrong. And whether or not changing that fact leads to more harm or less harm is irrelevant. It's just wrong. I mean, hell, we'd have a whole lot less crime if we didn't have a Fourth Amendment, right? Like if cops could just stop and search anybody at any time for any reason, we'd sure have a lot less crime, wouldn't we? But do you want to pay that price? Just the fact that a bad statistic goes down or a good statistic goes up is not reason enough to set public policy when we're talking about people's inalienable rights. And I believe it's an inalienable right for us to be able to use cannabis. All right, we're going to expand on that thought when we come back. Talk a little bit more about our civil rights, about our inalienable rights, our hemp heritage. We were founded by a bunch of drunken hemp farmers. I find it hard to believe they would think we didn't have a right to that plant. We're back right after the break. Stick around.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Every strain, every sale, every medical study. Keep it right here on the Cannabis Radio Network.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Vuber vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Vuber vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be, the Vuber way.
Tommy Chong is ready to cut through the smoke and change the tone of Tilk Radio.
You're going to be a
great granddad.
Pretty cool.
Morgan is Ray Dawn's son. Morgan and his wife, Tracy, they've been trying to have a baby for quite some time. Did you hear what I said to Morgan?
What?
Do you know who the father is?
The Tommy Chong Podcast, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome to my world.
The Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com, the national wildlife refuge for marijuana unicorns.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Most of us pirates, we go on vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville. What are you smoking there, boy?
This is Dan Michaels from danmichaelsaudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back. About 10 after the hour here, and we were talking about our inalienable rights as cannabis consumers and how legalization is just understanding and accepting and enshrining that right. And not even really to the extent that we deserve it, right? I mean, we're just barely crawling out of our Emancipation Proclamation at this point. We're still not to the point of Loving v. Virginia or the election of Barack Obama, right? We're still at the just barely no longer being persecuted phase. And it's something that's frustrating to me because I think there's a huge gap in how we perceive, I know there's a huge gap between how we perceive reform and how the general public and our opponents are perceiving this. For example, oftentimes you'll hear people talk about how popular medical marijuana is. Oh my God, 28 states have medical marijuana. 89% of the public says people ought to be able to use medical marijuana. And when we hear that, we think of medical marijuana. Like, okay, I can grow a whole bunch of pot plants and I can harvest the buds from them and I can process them into oil and I can use that for my medical purposes, whether I have cancer, a backache, anxiety, post-traumatic stress, or I'm just bored on a Saturday night. That's what we think. Some of us are even in that all uses medical camp, right? It's all medical. But folks, our opponents and the general public don't think of it that way. When those polls are coming out where people are saying 70-80% support for medical marijuana, they're talking about what they think medical marijuana is, which is, okay, you're extremely sick and suffering, you're close to your deathbed, and you've tried all the other medications and all the other surgeries, and nothing else works, and so as a last resort, we'll let you smoke some pot. That's what medical marijuana is to a lot of people. Not so much out west. Out west here, we understand, you know, guy wants to grow a pot garden and so forth. It's no big deal. But when we start looking eastward, that's more akin to what the concept of medical marijuana is. So don't be thinking that, hey, we've got it made because everybody loves medical marijuana. Well, everybody loves highly regulated, doctor supervised, no quacks involved, no pretend backaches, on your deathbed terminal illness medical marijuana, sure. But 20-year-old skateboarder standing in line at a tent at a rap concert to tell some doc there that he's got anxiety and will pay $40 for a card so he can go smoke some pot at the cannabis cup, that's not the medical that's getting 89% support, folks. And on that same idea, in that same vein, is the idea of what legalizing marijuana means. For us, we have that tagline, treat marijuana like alcohol. Treat marijuana like alcohol. Legalize it, right? Have it be legal. And to us, what that means is we're actually leaving a word out of that phrase. And that is treat marijuana users like alcohol users. When we think of that, when we think of legalization, we think of it as being like beer. We should be able to buy it. We should be able to brew it. We should be able to drink it. We should have places we can go to meet other people, to enjoy their company and drink it and use it like beer, right? We should be treated equally. We, like our friends who drink beer, we shouldn't be fired from our jobs just because we got drunk on the weekend. Like our friends that drink beer, we shouldn't be discriminated against when we're trying to get jobs or loans or security clearances or child custody just because we might enjoy a glass of wine or two. But that's not what the other side hears. That's not what the other side thinks. For the other side, for the general public out there, when legalization is hitting their ballot, they're not seeing that and going, by God, it's about time that we extended the rights and equalities and freedoms to cannabis consumers that we've been giving to alcohol consumers all this time. No, that's not what they're thinking. When they're seeing that legalization on the ballot, they're going, Jesus, finally, locking people up for this hasn't worked. Let's stop doing that stupid war on drugs. And that's a long ways away from saying, I love cannabis consumers and they ought to be treated equally and they ought to have lounges and have the same rights and responsibilities as beer drinkers. What they're thinking is, let's stop the failed war on drugs. Let's stop doing the thing that really, really, really sucks. But left unsaid there is the part where, but it's not really like alcohol. We're going to monitor it and make it really secure and make sure you can only buy a certain amount of it and that certain amount that you buy has been tested and inspected and you can only grow a tiny amount of plants and not in Washington State, mind you, but in other states you can just buy just a handful of plants and then, we can still discriminate against you at your job. Yeah, we can still fire you for it. We can still take your kids over it. We can still deny you an organ transplant over it. We can still deny you housing, but it's legal. We won't throw you in jail. It's still legal. See, that's what they think. They think they've done this huge favor, this huge service for us. What did you want? We stopped locking you up in cages. Yeah, but you're still treating us like second-class citizens. That's the problem. They don't recognize that what we said treat marijuana like alcohol didn't refer to the substances. It referred to the users of those substances. And so as we continue, we're going to have quite a battle on our hands. Because as this country makes this right turn into conservatism again, I believe that as reform goes on, it's going to hew closer to the idea of it's still reviled. It's still a culture that needs to be put down. It's still a people who need to be surveilled. But we won't lock them up anymore. I see a future coming of extreme control and paranoia. I see a possibility of trying to shut down our marijuana markets. I know so many people say, oh, it's a $20 billion industry by 2020 or $30 billion or whatever it's going to be. And all these jobs and all of this economic, oh, they'll never want to turn that down. Really? You really don't think that the pendulum could swing back on this one? Because first of all, think about the states where marijuana is legalized. Other than Alaska, they're all blue states. They're all coastal elite states, as the Trumpkins would call it. So how much does hurting an economic engine in those states really resonate with the people who are going to be in charge? For them, it might almost be payback. We'll show you, you hippie liberals. We'll take away your next green rush. We'll take away all of the plans you had to get rich over the next decade and fund your retirement and your kids' college. You don't think they'd be that vindictive? I lived through the Bush era, man. I believe they can be that vindictive. So that's one of my worries, is that a lot of our movement people, a lot of our activism and think tank type people, especially the ones that are more connected to some of the industries out there, are painting, I think, too rosy a prognostication for what we're going to see in the next decade. And I think, you know, the blinders might be on because it's in their own best interest, right? They don't want to sound the alarm that, oh, my God, Trump's elected. He's going to pick Jeff Sessions as attorney general. And, oh, my God, the sky's going to fall. Whatever you do, stop investing. Don't invest in any of these companies, man, because, oh, the sky's going to fall. They don't want to say that. They want to keep everyone thinking, don't worry. The gravy train is still on the tracks. Keep investing. Keep pumping money into our fledgling little companies. Everything will be fine. There's not going to be any raids. There's not going to be any audits. There's not going to be any problems. Trump's a businessman. He loves business. He'll never direct his people to go against the legal marijuana industry. No, he likes the profit and the business. Yes, so do his rich friends and all their stock in beer and pharmaceuticals.
Excellent.
Isn't life grand?
Excellent!
Got all those private prisons we still need to fill. Yeah, we were going to start getting rid of the private prisons. That was one of the major things Hillary Clinton was talking about, but not no more, folks. Telling you, I don't want to be right about this, and it feels weird to be kind of in the minority saying this, but I think there are some troubled times ahead for marijuana legalization.
We have your smoking section right here. This is the Cannabis Radio Network.
Everyone deserves the medicine they need. Aaron's premium CBD essentials and CBD nectar products are made from plant-based organic ingredients, grown and processed in the United States. Our unique formula of coconut oil and coconut water, infused with CBD oil, is ideal for all skin types and provides maximum relief. Aaron's Essentials was formulated by 9/11 first responder and stage 4 cancer survivor Aaron Sieber. As a cannabis connoisseur, Aaron began making and using his own lab-tested medicinal cannabis products to help relieve the side effects of his rigorous cancer treatments. Visit www.canisaurbrands.com for more information on Aaron's Essentials and learn how you can pay it forward. That's CANNAISSEURBRANDS.com.
Tokers, there's no good reason to get your dog stoned. While it might not harm them physically, imagine being a dog who already begs for treats all day, and then imagine that dog having the munchies. Not cool.
Marijuana is not addictive, but listening to the Russ Belville Show is.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
And blue blasting gurgan, fuffin' deer blasting, schnurb norbin. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Hope you had yourself a good safety briefing. So earlier today, I was talking about the perception of harm for the kids. You know, how much they fear the marijuanas. And how our opponents think that it's important that the kids fear the marijuanas or else they'll start using them.
Oh, won't somebody please think of the children?
Yeah, won't we think of the children? And I went through the data and showed you how there's really no good correlation between the declining perception of harm and increase or decrease in teen marijuana use. Some places, the perception of harm decreased a whole lot, but the marijuana use didn't go up. Other places, the marijuana use went up, but the perception of harm stayed the same, and vice versa, and contra and obverse. Every different arrangement you could think of, you find in this data. No clear correlation. And the reason why is because the perception of harm is a bullshit stat. It's a bullshit stat with no baseline. See, the problem we've got is that they're trying to measure how much the kid's perception of harm has changed from before when they were fed bullshit to now when they're fed truth. When I was going to high school in the 1980s, junior high and high school, when Ronald Reagan was president, in fact, leading into, I believe, my junior high, like seventh grade was when Reagan was elected. Reagan actually said, "Well, I now have absolute proof that smoking one marijuana cigarette is equivalent in brain damage to being on Bikini Island during an A-bomb blast." Seriously. When I was a kid, the President of the United States told me that smoking just one pot cigarette would be like nuclear fallout to my brain. Would be like being on a bombed island. It would be just as bad. gee, I wonder what my perception of harm would have been back then. That sounds pretty fucking scary, doesn't it? I'd have thought there's a whole lot of harm. And nowadays, kids see, hey, 8 states legalized, 28 have medical marijuana. My friend has a cousin in Colorado who's a cancer patient who uses it. My mom has a sister in California who's using it for anxiety. Aunt Kathy seems okay. She seems fine. That is, the kids are getting real information. They're understanding that cannabis is a medicine. They're understanding that the regular use of it by responsible adults is of no concern. It's no big deal. So yeah, their perception of harm has fallen. Sure, it went from, you know, scrambled eggs in the frying pan to medicine. Of course the perception of harm went down. Speaking of the scrambled eggs, you remember that commercial, right? From back in the 80s. This is your brain. This is drugs. This is your brain on drugs. Any questions? Yeah, could I get a side order of hash browns with that? You remember that one, right? And then that was the 80s one. And then in the 90s, they redid it. You remember that one where they had, was it Rachel Lee Cook? Was that the actress's name? Where she's got the pan and the eggs, and now she's smashing everything up. Well, as I was doing my prep for this story, I wanted to find that audio clip, right, of This Is Your Brain on Drugs guy, right? And so I was going through YouTube, and I found this clip, which is the original 1990s This Is Your Brain on Drugs commercial. But you may not have known this. We were only shown the short version back in the 90s, the 30-second version. Apparently, there was a much longer version, an extended cut that was made for this This Is Your Brain on Drugs commercial that hasn't been seen by most people and has just been unearthed. Let me play this for you. I'll give you the audio for it. This Is Your Brain on Drugs, the extended version.
This is your brain. And this is heroin. This is what happens to your brain after snorting heroin. And this is what your body goes through. Wait, it's not over yet.
This is what your family goes through! And your friends and money! And your drugs and your self-respect and your future!
Any questions?
Yeah, we have a lot of questions.
Why do you have to do this to every room in the house?
I'm making a point, Dad.
None of us do heroin, honey.
What does all this symbolize?
It means heroin smashes your money.
Oh my God, she didn't even think it through.
How else was I gonna make my point?
I don't know. Just send us an email.
But smashing stuff is dramatic.
I told you, if you want to smash things, you go to the garage.
But I need to express myself.
No, you need to get a summer job.
My wine glasses. I got these from Pottery Barn. Rachel, where are my stemlesses?
You know, I've never done heroin, but honestly, Rachel, this makes me want to.
No, this is what heroin does to your
life. Hold on. This is way more damage than anyone on heroin has ever done. You know what people on heroin do? They sleep. Mm-hmm. And they wake up and they buy more heroin.
Yeah, like Stuart.
Wait, what?
My dinner party tonight is officially completely ruined.
Rachel, just go to your room, okay?
You're welcome.
No!
Not again, Rachel. Shouldn't have given her that bedroom pan.
You bought her a bedroom pan?
Yeah, bedroom pan.
I gotta stop her.
Dad, can I have a bedroom pan?
Oh.
Thanks, Dad.
The eggshells are like your brain. No. Your brain is like the yolk. The cutlery, that doesn't break because that's your drive to do heroin. Sorry, I'm on a lot of coke right now.
There you go, the extended cut of the This Is Your Brain on Drugs commercial. Of course, that's a parody, but a funny one at that. You can see the video if you'd like and download the data and graphics from that drug war data mining I did in the first hour, available at weednews.co. That's right, weednews.co, a new blog that I'm a part of that is shooting up the charts as far as marijuana news goes. You make sure to make that a hyperlink, a bookmark in your folder there. Good Lord, I sound like my dad. bookmark that site, weednews.co. Get all the latest news and information every day at weednews.co. Now, the other news that I wanted to get to today has to do with how we are licensing people to get involved in the marijuana industry. One of the big concerns that has been floated about this is how we set up roadblocks, obstacles to getting licensing that disproportionately affect minority business owning. In the laws, oftentimes, when they pass these for medical or for recreational marijuana, and you want to get a business license, they'll say, oh, you got to meet these certain qualifications. And some of those qualifications often end up being that you were never convicted of a drug offense, of like a trafficking offense. And that naturally disqualifies a disproportionate number of Black and Latino potential business owners, because Blacks and Latinos are more likely to have gotten busted when they were working in the illegal market. So we take all the people who've been busted in the past and say, you can't do this legally. You did it illegally, and because you got caught, you can't do it legally. Now, we don't have any such restriction for people who are doing it illegally in the past who didn't get caught. They don't have a record. They have no way of proving that they were doing this illegally in the past. So if you were a really good dealer who was either lucky enough, white enough, or careful enough, or some combination thereof, to not get caught, then we'll let you in the marijuana business. But if you were unlucky or just got caught, you know, however it happened, well, we're not going to let you in. So isn't this, in a sense, rewarding criminals for being successful? Doesn't it say, if you were an illegal dealer or an illegal grower, and you were good enough at it, sneaky enough at it, secretive enough at it to not get caught, well, then we'll let you play. And who knows how much corruption works into this, right? Maybe you were one of the big-time players in the grow or the trafficking illegally and had the kind of money to pay bribes to cops or to whoever to not get caught. Or maybe you were so successful at it that you did get caught, but you had the kind of money to afford the kind of lawyers to get that charge thrown off or expunged from your record. And you're allowed to play now in the legal marijuana market because you were such a good criminal and made so much money that we couldn't pin a crime to you. So we're rewarding the people who are the best criminals. I don't have a problem with that because I don't think it's criminal in the first place, buying and selling and trafficking marijuana. I don't see a crime being committed when one person wants to sell something to another person who wants to buy it. No crime. But from their perspective, wouldn't that seem like they're rewarding the best criminals? The way I see it is that if you got caught in the past, that ought to be bonus points on your application. Yeah, we ought to reward people who got caught. It ought to be like our reparations for having interrupted their business operation, for having abrogated their civil rights, for having put them in cages for no good reason. We ought to reward those people. We ought to feel bad that we did that to them. We ought to give them a benefit by letting them have a leg up in getting the legal business licenses. If we did this, it would be affirmative action for Black and Latinos to get these licenses without actually being a racially based affirmative action. Because if you're a white guy that got caught, you'd still get the same points, right? You'd still get the same bonus. But since white guys were less likely to get caught, more Black and Latino people will get that bonus. I like it. I like the idea of increasing minority ownership and involvement in the legal marijuana industry. And I like doing it by rewarding people for having gotten busted in the past. It's the least we could do for them, don't you think? And besides, don't we want people who are on the criminal side to move to the legal side? If we continue to deny licensing to the people who got busted in the past, all we're doing is encouraging them to remain on the criminal side. We're not going to let them make a buck with a license, so they'll just keep making a buck the way they've been making a buck. All right, we're going to take a break. I got more to say about that with a word on the licensing fees when we return.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Earn your PhD in THC monetization with CannabisRadio.com. Don't be late.
While the feds and state are doing their dance, you still need to transact business and manage your cash. Go professional and let your customers pay with PayQuick. They pay you and they earn rewards points. PayQuick connects to your bank account for free and secures all of your transactions. And with PayQuick, you can pay your producers and processors for free. Plus, it pays to have it because it makes depositing your cash safe and so easy. No cops, no crooks, just compliance and comfort, knowing you have your cannabis business in check with PayQuick. PayQuick, the safe and easy way to pay. PayQuick.com.
I'm Radical Russ from the Russ Belville Show.
Washington, it has passed. The news organizations are calling it.
So they just did call it officially for 64. Yeah.
Tell everybody in the red states how great legal weed is. Yeah, looking forward to legal weed here in the state of Oregon.
It's the Russ Belville Show, the NPR of POT, weekdays live at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific, exclusively on CannabisRadio.com.
This is the Russ Belville Show, annoying Kevin Sabet since 2012.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Remember, friends, there's more to life than marijuana. I just can't remember what it is. Why'd I come in here? You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We're talking about the licensing of legal marijuana, whether it be recreational or medical. And some of the obstacles that get placed in the way of people wanting to legally be involved in the commerce of cannabis. And this brings me to a story that I picked up off the wire from Arkansas Online. And the title of it is, "To Grow Medical Marijuana in Arkansas, It's $15,000 to Ask." Yeah, what they're referring to here is an application fee that's been determined by the Arkansas Medical Marijuana Commission. On Tuesday, they decided that anybody who just wants to apply, you just want to apply to grow medical marijuana in Arkansas, it's going to cost you $15,000. Now, if they deny your application, they'll give you half of it back. So it's going to cost you $7,500 to get a no. $15,000 to get a yes. And of course, Arkansas is going to be one of these places that limits how many licenses there's going to be. So yeah, $7,500 down the tubes if you get a no. Now, during the meeting of this commission, they discussed on what the annual license fee itself should be. So keep in mind, folks, this application fee, this $15,000 that you're putting down just to turn in a piece of paper, does nothing for your annual licensing fee. You're still going to have to pay thousands of dollars if you're approved. So it's $15,000 just to get a yes. Then once you got the yes, you're going to have to spend tens of thousands of dollars after that to have the license. Now, we don't know what that number will be, because they tabled that discussion. They're not going to set what that's going to be yet. But as they discussed it, they said that the medical marijuana program is going to cost between $4 and $6 million a year. And they say the tax revenue will only come up to about $2.5 million a year. And that's why they need to have such high application fees and licensing fees, is to make up the difference between all of that. Because these marijuana programs throughout the United States, why they're always running a deficit, aren't they? No, folks, let me tell you, in the state of Oregon, we've had a medical marijuana program since 1998. There has yet to be a year that that program has not turned a profit. There has never been a year that the medical marijuana program in Oregon has failed to generate a surplus. So much so that the legislature passed laws that allowed them to dip into that surplus and spend that money elsewhere, against our wishes, of course. So when they make these predictions that, oh my God, we're going to have such high fees because we'll never be able to pay off, it's all bullshit, folks. It's all smoke and mirrors. They're just trying to make that surplus as big as they possibly can. Now, should be noted that Oregon has some of the highest medical marijuana card fees in the country, maybe the highest. It's $200 to get your medical marijuana card, where other states like Colorado, it's $15. Colorado actually passed their law making it so that the cost of the fee was indexed to the operation of the program. So if it becomes cheaper to operate the program, the fee actually goes down. Not Oregon. Our fee was originally $100. They decided the surpluses they were getting weren't quite large enough. Let's raise it to $200. So when they talked about what the licensing fees should be, one of the council members, one of these commission members, pointed out that Connecticut charges $100,000 a year for its licensing fees. There's a couple of states, Colorado and Massachusetts. You take a look at their medical marijuana programs, they have similar exorbitant non-refundable fees for their medical marijuana application program, and they require that anyone that applies has to show, I think in Massachusetts, I think it's $500,000. I think in Connecticut, it's $2 million. They got to show that they have that much money in escrow. So when they set these ridiculously high fees, all they're doing is once again guaranteeing that the people owning the industry are largely going to be white men. Because again, throughout history, we have a racist system that has prevented the accumulation of wealth among Black and Latino families. Look it up, man. Look up redlining. Just start with redlining and go from there. So you set these super high fees, and then, yeah, it's harder for Black and Latino business owners to get in because they don't have the same wealth networks that the white owners have. But regardless, even just take the racial element out of it. You set your fee at $15,000 non-refundable, and the only types of people that can get involved are the kind of people that got money already. You're talking about rich people getting in on the green rush to get richer. If we really want this to be an economic engine that helps to raise up average people, we've got to make the barriers the kind of barriers average people can clear. Instead of reserving the marijuana market, reserving the marijuana industry to the people that are already capitalized, already wealthy, already less likely to suffer the harms of marijuana prohibition. $15,000 non-refundable fee. There's another story I wanted to bring up. This one's out of citypages.com from Minnesota. And it kind of goes along the same lines of some of my posts recently, where as we continue the reform of marijuana laws, as we have one-fifth of the country, 21% of the people, now living in a state where marijuana is legal, and about 60% of the country living in a state where medical marijuana is legal, the draconian sentences people get for marijuana are becoming harder and harder and harder for people to countenance. These multi-year sentences for people involved with marijuana in one state, where they'd be just doing business in another state, is starting to engender a cognitive dissonance for people, even people that aren't involved in the marijuana movement. And this comes to us in stunning relief from the City Pages story entitled, "A Minnesota Man Just Got 4 Years for Prison, 4 Years in Prison for Marijuana in 2016. And it's out of South Minneapolis. A man by the name of Stephen Yang was charged with, or pled guilty to, first degree drug possession with intent to sell 258 pounds of marijuana in Minnesota. 258 pounds of marijuana. And so he was sentenced by Judge Gina Brandt to 74 months in prison, in a Minnesota state prison. 74 months. This guy's going to get out around New Year's Day 2021. We've got about the next 5 years. 6 years. That's 6 years, isn't it? 72 months would be, yeah, that's 6 years. 6 years, 2 months that this guy got. So he's going to get out somewhere around 2021, they say. Maybe it's with good behavior. Yeah. So really, his sentence is going to run into 2022. Let's see, 6 years and 2017 would be 2023. So yeah, good behavior, he's out in 2021. If he serves his entire sentence, he'll be in till 2023. So we're going to put a guy in prison for 6 years. Now, granted, 268 pounds of marijuana, 258 pounds of marijuana, a lot of marijuana, no doubt about it. No doubt about, we're talking about trafficking levels, right? But we're also talking about an amount of marijuana that in a Colorado or Washington or Oregon or Alaska pot shop would not really raise an eyebrow. We had 4 states pass legalization this year. We've got the Gallup poll sitting at 60% for support of legalization. So when Minnesota goes and sentences a guy to 6 years for marijuana, it's starting to raise some eyebrows. And it really starts to raise some eyebrows when people start comparing it to the sentences people get for other crimes. Just, what was it, in September, the same judge who, or the same county, I should say, prosecuted a man who swindled, he was a financial advisor, and he swindled 2 elderly women out of more than $220,000. So for taking advantage of 2 old folks for almost $250,000, a man named John Heath, just last September, got sentenced to 45 months in prison. Got that? Rip off 2 old people for $250,000, you get 45 months. 258 pounds of marijuana, you get 74 months. Now, nobody was harmed by the marijuana, that shipment of marijuana. Nobody could have been killed. Apparently, if this guy, if Stephen Yang wanted to make a whole bunch of money, he should have just ripped off old people instead of trying to sell marijuana. At least that's what Minnesota's telling me. In fact, one day, according to the story, one day before they busted Yang for the marijuana, the day before, there was this woman who caused a hit and run accident that killed a person. Hit and run. Ran into someone, killed them, drove off. This woman was sentenced to 45 months. 45 months for hitting someone with your car and then driving off. 74 months for trying to sell marijuana. And it's just becoming more and more impossible for the average person to hear that kind of story and think that there's any sort of justice involved. It's just becoming more and more untenable for people to support this kind of injustice when they see pot shops in Colorado generating millions of dollars in tax revenue to build schools. When they see pot shops in Washington State generating millions and millions of dollars in revenue to help the state. How do you justify locking up ripoff artists and hit and run manslaughter causers, manslaughterers? How do you justify locking them up 45 months, locking up the guy for weed 74? Well, according to the Hennepin County attorney, why, marijuana is 10 to 100 times stronger. I want to get some of that marijuana that's 100 times stronger. You got any of that? All right, we'll be back in just a minute. Stay tuned.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Forwarding the cause of legalization and research of the growing cannabis industry, one podcast at a time. The Cannabis Radio Network.
Play as Ted Growing, expelled botany sophomore and the biggest grower in town, only on Weed Firm Replanted. Available on the App Store and Google Play.
It's a lot of work being the biggest grower in town. Maintaining a room full of plants while dealing with a slew of eccentric customers, from a hardcore partier to the curious neighbor next door.
Is anybody home?
Help me expand my bud business by unlocking new strains, customizing my grow room, and completing challenges that you can't get enough of. Grow your empire so big you can see it from space. Low on funds? Don't worry. Weed Firm Replanted is free to download.
Download Weed Firm Replanted for free on the App Store and Google Play today. Get growing, Mr. Growing.
Midnight, July 1st, 2015, adult marijuana prohibition came to an end in Oregon. Immediately, over 400,000 adults who consume cannabis responsibly were no longer criminals. This is what freedom sounds like. Brought to you by Portland Normal.
The Russ Belville Show, providing dictionaries to drug czars since 2009.
The International Cannabis Business Conference comes to San Francisco, California on February 16th and 17th, 2017. The ICBC San Francisco, Northern California's first business-to-business event since the recent historic election, will bring together top state regulators and industry leaders to discuss permits, business models, and opportunities within the newly enacted laws and landscape. Of course, the ICBC also famously offers some of the best cannabis industry networking, leveraging our worldwide following to connect wholesalers, brands, distributors, investors, and strategic partners. And don't forget to come early for our VIP reception and stay late for our legendary after party. Join us for the longest continuously running cannabis business conference in California at the Hilton San Francisco Union Square, the one and only International Cannabis Business Conference. Visit internationalcbc.com for tickets today.
Warning. hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. This is the Rush Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everyone. As we close up shop today, another bit of information about the applications for medical marijuana licensing. We talked about how the fees are too high. We talked about how the requirements are too onerous. And now we're going to talk a little bit about how much data is being sucked up in these, because we just got news from CBS out of Nevada, where the Nevada state government website has leaked the personal data on over 11,700 applicants for dispensing medical marijuana in the state. Each application, 8 pages in length, includes the person's full name, home address, citizenship, weight, height, race, eye color, hair color, driving license number, and social security number. Yep. This isn't a hack, folks. This wasn't hacked and released. This is just some bad programming on their website that allows someone who knows how to use Google the right way to be able to just suck up personal data, social security numbers on people, 11,700 people that have applied. And this is part of a form, by the way, that also requires that must be submitted electronically. Nevada does an all electronic sort of thing, and is included with a fingerprint submission form. So people could link up your fingerprints with this social security number and your address and your name and your birth date and all your identifying information. How's that sound? Here we go, folks. Yet another way in which this treating marijuana as if it were plutonium, having to track it from seed to sale and know every single detail about the people that are buying, selling, and producing it. Another example where this is biting us on the ass, where we are being treated differently than people that want to sell just about anything else out there. Or even if we grant that maybe some other types of businesses require this level of intrusion and inspection, they're not letting that information go out over their internet portals without enough security, are they? Heard any data leaks from the people that run distilleries or breweries lately? People applying for liquor licenses or pharmacy licenses? Heard any major leak problems with them lately? Nope. Nope, don't see that happening very often. But with marijuana data, huh? What do you know? And keep in mind, folks, that some of the people that are applying for these dispensaries and such might want that information to remain private, not just because they don't want people hacking their social security number and all that kind of stuff, but just because maybe public knowledge of them being in the marijuana industry hurts their other business opportunities, their other areas in their life. 11,700. Amazing. All right, folks, that's all the time we got for today. Time flies when you legalize. Thanks for joining us here for our 2 hours of talk and data and analysis. Every day, at least every weekday that's not a federal holiday or a travel day, right here on CannabisRadio.com. For everyone here at Delta 9 Studios in beautiful legal Southeast Portland, Oregon, I'm Radical Russ. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers!
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. Take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.